Hi, everyone. Welcome to PsychTech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. I am your host, Josue Cardona. With me, as always, Kelly Dunlap. What's up, Kelly?
Well, I'm going to PAX tomorrow.
Whoa, what's PAX?
The Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle, Washington.
Also known as PAX Prime.
Yeah. It's, I think, the largest gaming convention in the U.S. Something like 8,000 people.
Open to the public.
Open to the public. Yeah, you can't count E3. San Diego Comic-Con is more than video games, but PAX is just video games. And so I'm equal parts excited and hectic as I'm trying to get my life together while I get ready to go to PAX.
Are you doing anything in particular over there? Are you presenting or are you just hanging out?
Nope. I got notified about a week ago that they never actually rejected my panel. They really liked it, and they were trying to wait for somebody else to drop out at the last second, and that didn't work out. So it was kind of like getting waitlisted, which I don't really know how to feel about. But so I almost got a panel, but right now I'm going to go as a convention goer, which will be nice after RTX. A little chance to relax, play a lot of games, and you know, see Seattle, which is, of course, beautiful. And then, of course, I actually missed the first day of class because I'm flying home. So that is yet another reason the crazy, hectic, oh my God, life is ending panic is right now.
That's cool, though. But if you're going to miss a day of class, PAX is not a bad reason.
Yeah, you know, I'm missing a video game class because I'm at a video game convention. I feel like that's legitimate.
So why don't we talk a little bit more about video games while we're at it? Because, well, you know, we kind of do that every now and then.
If you insist. So earlier this week, we Josue and I like to think up topics that we want to cover, and we pitch ideas to one another. And on Twitter, I had seen this come across my newsfeed, and it was a talk from GDC. So that's the Game Developers Conference, which is a big deal. It's kind of the grand poobah of game developer conferences, so to speak. Maybe Kai. That one's important, too. They're both really cool. Anyway, there's this one particular talk that caught my attention entitled Antisocial Behavior in Games, How Can Game Design Help? And that just, all my alarm bells went off and said that has every buzzword that I love and I must listen to it right. I was in bed and I just watched it on my phone the entire hour of it and I just didn't even move because it was so fascinating and so interesting. And it was presented by Dr. Ben Lewis Evans. And I'm so excited because, again, this is my jam. This is what I love, the perfect intersection of psychology and video games.
And so let's define, like, when people think about antisocial behavior, like, a lot of people just think that means, you know, being kind of reclusive or not being social. But in psychology terms and according to the DSM, it really means like antagonistic behaviors. And
yes, behaviors, yeah, that potentially go out against social things. So asocial would be you're not social. Antisocial is like actively being against being social.
So some behaviors might be if someone says good morning and your response is you slap the person in the face.
that would be antisocial behavior.
That would be antisocial, yeah. But if you just ignored them, then that would be asocial.
And it's not to be confused with antisocial personality disorder, which is often called psychopathy. So the idea of a psychopath, that is, it's not the same thing, but there's a reason that they share a similar name. So when I was talking to John about this last night, he said the first thing, he's like, what, people who don't like to be around other people or have trouble making friends? No. Nice try, but no. It is actually, and once I explained it to him, he said, oh, trolls. Yes.
Yep.
That is the good gamer term for it. Is basically, this is a talk about how the design of a game can influence the behavior for good or for bad, especially for those who are engaging in a way that is social, but it is very negative.
Yeah. And the whole, the talk, and just, I've been thinking about it for a while, how that affects other areas too. And it's really interesting to see how, yeah, the people who are behind different applications, different games, how they, I think we can see that they really do keep in mind the fact that people can be really, really nasty and we can take away their ability to do so to a certain extent if we want to. And that goes beyond gaming. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're one of my favorite examples ever. And this, again, goes beyond gaming. It's the idea that design informs behavior, which is something that they don't really teach us in psychology. It's something that I've come across more in my game design courses of you are designing the game to elicit a certain behavior. But my favorite example is there's a real problem with people not finishing their antibiotic medications. They'll be given, say, a 30-day supply, and they feel better by day 22, so they stop taking their medication, even though they're instructed to take all of it. The reason you have to take all of it is that, yes, you're feeling better, but that doesn't mean that the pathogen in your system is completely gone. You need to take all days to make sure that it's 100% gone. Otherwise, you get stuff like multi-strain drug-resistant tuberculosis, because if you get rid of 99% of it and you don't finish the treatment, that 1% is the hardiest, most resistant pathogen. So long story short, you really should take all your medication. But there was one TED Talk where the gentleman was talking about designing medication so that this is no longer an issue. So for example, if you were to take, say, amoxicillin, a very common antibiotic, and you make 20 pills white and 5 pills blue, let's say, and even though it's all the same medication, and the instructions are take, you know, the white pills for 20 days, then take the blue pills for 5 days, the amount of people finishing their regimen skyrocketed. Like, the completion rate was so much higher just because of the way it was designed. Because there were very explicit instructions of do this, then this, as opposed to just do this.
But in that situation, you still, like, people can still take away, like, people could just stop taking the medication, period.
Well, they can, but right, they're less likely to if they think that this other part is somehow more important.
Ah, okay. That's where it comes. Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of the idea of, you know, kissing a boo-boo to make it feel better. It's not necessarily doing anything differently. It's almost the placebo effect. You think that it's going to be doing something differently, so you're more likely to follow through with it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's one of my favorite examples. And Dr. Lewis Evans goes into a lot of different examples as well. But before we dive into that, I could distinctly remember the very first time I really thought about game design as shaping behavior. And it was when I was playing Halo, and it was I think it was Halo Reach that I really became aware of it, because when you would play an objective game like Bomb or Flag or things like that, you got more points for slaying, for say shooting the enemy, than actually completing the objective, like actually planting the bomb or actually capturing the flag. And that annoyed me so much, because everybody who played, a lot of people did not go for the objective, which was the spirit and the point of the game. They just went for kills to boost their stats. And it frustrated me. And, you know, thinking about it psychologically, of course they're going to do that. They're being incentivized to act in a certain way. And when that incentive encourages you to act in a way that is antithetical to the actual objective, then you get this tension of people who are playing the same game but with two different rule sets.
So that goes more into just behavior in games in general, right? Game design more generally. That reminds me of, you know, classic example of the first level in Super Mario Brothers. Number one, you know, it's designed in a way where the character is facing in a certain direction. You can only move in that direction, kind of just to help people move, you know, learn how to play the game by limiting what they can do in that first instance. And so, yeah, so like obviously like the game designers have all the power in what they can do and what they want the player to do by incentivizing them or by either placing limits or certain options. And of course, that talk was really interesting because it focused specifically on antisocial and pro-social behaviors too, because you touched on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were there any examples or have there been any experiences for you in gaming? Obviously, there's tons because you play tons of Halo, but that were just, you know, the worst antisocial behavior you can imagine, and a moment where you thought, like, this doesn't have to be this way. Maybe the designers could do something about it.
It's not even so much in game as opposed to just communication. So last week I was actually in Baltimore and I spoke on a Women in Games panel, and as part of my presentation, I displayed kind of my top five hits of the last 5 years in terms of really vitriolic hate mail I've received. So there was one that in the matter of 2 minutes, this one gentleman sent me, I think, about 12 different Xbox Live messages with death threats, rape threats, you know, like really horrific name calling, you know, sexual stuff. It was terrible. And I laugh because I think it's really funny. The grammar was awful and whatnot. And there was a 69 at the end of his gamer tag, which I can never take seriously. Anyway.
It's the year he was born.
Well, that's funny, though. Most people think that people doing these really horrible things online are teenagers. They're not. Most of the people who engage in really antisocial behaviors tend to be adult men. So let's kibosh that right there. But yeah, receiving stuff like that, and it just seems so unnecessary. And I know with the Xbox One, they've done a lot better with the way that the friends lists are set up, the way that messaging is set up. You know, it's much easier to block people. The reporting function is actually really powerful. On 360, it really wasn't that great. But on the Xbox One, there's a way to, you know, write out what happened. So not just picking a category, but actually getting to explain what happened. And so the design of the feedback system on the Xbox One has definitely done a lot more to help with that. And then the biggest thing for any Halo fans out there is in the older Halos, there was, you could hear your teammates, for example, and they would just chat and you would have to manually mute them. And then there was also proximity chat. So you could hear the other team in the lobby as well and in the game sometimes. And that's when you got some really, really awful, horrible things thrown your way. As now, it's team chat is I think more or less off by default. You almost have to opt into it, which that, I mean, it's such a small thing, but it makes such a big difference. The difference between having to opt out and opt in as a player, it really does change your experience and the amount of toxicity you're exposed to.
Yeah, and that's a great example, right? So just that making the default off instead of on, automatically, once you're in there, your experience is guaranteed to be better, right? And then if you really want the other thing, then you can opt in. Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, well, how about you?
He mentioned a few games that are just genius. So he mentions Journey a couple times. It's a PlayStation game. And I really didn't think about it until he explained it this way. But in that game, you can jump in and out of other people's games, and you don't know who they are, first of all. And you don't know... there's no way to communicate, only through a button where you kind of make like musical notes. And you can do that to kind of signal to somebody to come over here. And then that same button, it recharges your fellow player's abilities. And that's the only thing you can do. You can only help. You can only help recharge the other person and signal to them. So if you wanted to do anything negative, you have no option. You can't push a person off a cliff. You can't cause them to die. You can't damage them. Even just coming close to them, you're automatically helping them. Mm-hmm. And I've played the game many times. I replayed it now before we recorded just this morning because I wanted to kind of live through that again. And it was, you know, it was absolutely right. There was no way to have a negative experience with another player there. Doesn't matter how much they wanted to do it. And he mentioned Destiny a few times too. And one of my favorite things in Destiny is the celebratory, what are they called? They're
dance
like gestures.
Moves.
Yeah, yeah. So there's so you can wave, you can bow, you can dance. And that's pretty much it. So whenever everybody is in a team and they're doing something great, everybody starts dancing. It's fantastic. I love that. And there's no button for threatening. There's no button for telling you that you did bad. There's no button for anything negative. The buttons are there for only positive. So you don't have the option for that. And for me, I hate playing online for a number of reasons, right? With people who aren't my friends. And the antisocial behaviors are number one. And I started thinking about other things too, like Facebook and Twitter, where sometimes I think, man, I wish Facebook had an unlike button, right? Right.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it doesn't have an unlike button. Your only options are to share something or to like it. And I'm sure they've debated many times, should we add an unlike button? Of course not, because that's horrible, right? On YouTube, for example, you do have a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Right.
But a lot of social networks opt not to do that. So you don't, and actually, I think that there is a plugin for Chrome where it will add an unlike button to Facebook, but then only people who install the plugin can see how many unlikes something gets. So that's another way where the option is there if you really want it, mm-hmm. but the people who designed it in a way where that's not the case. And it's really tough to jump to the conclusion that, well, if somebody didn't like my stuff, they have negative feelings toward it, right? You really can't jump to that conclusion based on the data. So you have to assume that everybody's going from zero up, right? It's like either neutral or positive. That's the only thing you can actually show. And that's fascinating.
Yeah. One of the online communities I'm a part of has like plus ones and minus ones. So it's the Rooster Teeth community. There's plus one cool, plus one awesome, but there's also negative one flame bait, negative one lame. The idea is that good content will be promoted to the top and not good content will disappear. So for example, if someone's post gets more than five negative marks, it actually disappears from view and you have to elect to see it. So in theory, that's a really great idea. Unfortunately, that's not the way the internet works. And I've seen people use it as a malicious attack tool. You can minus somebody because you don't like them, because you disagree with them, and it's anonymous, so you can do whatever you want. And it can be used almost as a weapon to completely delegitimize somebody, to attack somebody's credibility. So yeah, I much prefer on the Hub, the site that I run, there is no ability to downvote something. We do have a little alarm button. So if something's offensive, you push it, it alerts one of the admins to take care of it. But there's no actual way to downvote or to express dislike anonymously. And I think that is definitely a good thing.
Reddit is the same way, has plus one, minus one. And then it goes a step further into the pro-social side where you can actually give gold, where it's actually the currency that you buy. And you can give people, you know, something of actual value if you really, really appreciate their comment. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to see how which networks and which communities thrive, right, on maybe just based on that. I think one of the great things about Reddit is that you kind of can promote the best stuff to the top. Right. And but you're absolutely right. The negative one. One of the things that it said in that talk was that once you give the tools to the players for, I think he called them, it was a question at the end, right? Someone called it punishing behavior. So it could be seen as someone taking a negative action or punishing someone else for whatever reason. Once you give it to, when you give that power to the player, you have no control over how they use it, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is so important to understand because we are in a culture that is very online. And I think the number one question I get asked is it because of anonymity? There's that really famous, there's a cartoon drawing that is what, anonymity plus audience plus internet equals fuckwad, I think is what the actual image says. And it's the idea that the depersonalization effect, like, oh, they don't know it's me, so I can do whatever I want. The thing is, that's not enough. You know, on Facebook, people still say and do horrible things, even though it's tied to their quote unquote real account. And there's other places that have forced people to use their real information in the idea that that will help with the sense of depersonalization, but it hasn't helped. And there's some really interesting research coming out about what is it that makes people act like this online. So there's one article that basically, in short, just sums it up that internet trolling is everyday sadism. It's unchecked schadenfreude, pretty much. Another article that I really highly recommend is it looks at this triad, this cluster of triads of cyberbullying in adolescence. So it's only a single study and a lot more work needs to be done. But what they found is that if a person believes that the aggression is normal, if they believe that there's a low chance that they'll be caught, or rather that there's any consequences for what they're doing, and three, that the internet is impermanent, so whatever they say is just out there, then it goes away, not that it like stays with somebody forever and ever and ever. When that triad is completed, the incidence of cyberbullying and online aggression skyrockets. If you take just one of those away, the incidence plummets. So I feel like that's a really important part of just internet culture in general, and getting back to this the GDC talk by Ben, you know, he has some really solid examples of games specifically changing the design in order to change behavior. And that to me is the magic cocktail. How are you going to, one, make people either feel they're going to be caught? And that's one of the things he talks about is if someone gets caught every single time and punished every single time, they'll probably stop doing it. So that's one of the facets that they're working on, is being able to instantly identify people and instantly correct the behavior. But that's like impossible. I mean, you can't even do that with a potty training a puppy. You're gonna miss at least once or twice. So it's really, really difficult. So changing the culture, so the idea that this is normal, and I think he correct me if I'm wrong, Josue, but he used, I think, League of Legends as a really good example of that.
He talked about League and Dota.
Right.
I remember him talking more about Dota, but I remember the specific examples.
Yeah. So the idea that I can't remember whether it was League or Dota, but that there is a pop-up screen when you're in the queue that tells you people who talk and work collaboratively with their teammates have a 33% better chance of succeeding at their quest or whatever specific mission they're on. And that's based on real stats and real data. And they've seen that when they've shown that, the cooperation in a game goes up, that there's fewer reports of harassment, fewer reports of team killing or of just being destructive or trolly. So that helps with the idea that, hey, this is in your interest. And the idea of having the tribunal, that's from League of Legends. So for anybody who's not familiar, League of Legends, when somebody got in trouble, it actually went to a tribunal of users who would pretty much hear out the case and then cast their ballot about what should be done with this person. You know, was there an action should be taken or not? And if so, what action should be taken? So that, again, the idea that you're being held accountable for your actions is really important there too.
And in games like Dota and League, where your stats matter, you know, that kind of thing is important. It's different than in a game where that really doesn't matter. So even if you got banned, you could just start up another account and then just get on with it again, right? And that's something that happens in social media a lot easier because some people just don't care. They just want to voice their opinion. So they may even have multiple accounts. And so even that kind of thing, I remember Xbox used to have a reputation system.
It still does.
Still does that, right? And it used to be, and they've changed it over the years, and it's something that I followed a lot because I always found it really interesting. And I don't think anybody's found the perfect solution, especially on Xbox Live where you're playing so many different games. It's really hard to pinpoint how to do it or how to punish people, especially to punish people when – I remember there was a while where – and I think the talk touched upon this concept of where, well, all the negative people get lumped together with only the negative people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the positive people don't – you know, you don't play with them. And I always had some issues with that. Like, first idea was fantastic. Yeah, put all the trolls together, let them troll each other, and maybe they'll be happy, and we'll be happy, and everybody's happy. But you still have that problem where you might have somebody use the system to get somebody who didn't troll anybody end up in there, and then now they're surrounded by nothing but trolls.
But that is. Almost impossible. That is almost the definition of impossible. Like, you would need so many reports by so many different users. And I know specifically on the Xbox, that's what I'm familiar with. You can't just say, oh, this person was mean and check a box. Like, you actually, if you want to file a report, you actually have to take the time to fill in what it was they did and be actually very specific. And it takes quite a few of those kinds of reports, again, from different people, different IP addresses, to budge you. And I know almost nobody is in the troll hole on Xbox Live. And you know, the idea of segregating the meanies from the not meanies, Ben had a really good point that, well, if you get put down in this troll purgatory, you know, it might not even be punishment for you, and it might just actually normalize the behaviors that you already have, the behaviors that got you in there. And so that one prong of, you know, if people think it's normal, they're more likely to do it. And so that could actually be normalizing the experience. And I believe he even linked it to, say, prisons. You know, we see how well prisons work at rehabilitating people. Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things that seems like a really, really good idea in theory, But in practice, it doesn't, I think, have the effect that we want it to have, especially when there's not really necessarily a solid equivalent on the other side. Like, if I have a really good game with somebody, I can say, hey, good game. And I think I can give them like a thumbs up or something. I'm not entirely sure anymore. But that doesn't, I mean, one, that doesn't do anything for me other than, hey, you know, I'm a good person. But it doesn't incite somebody to change their behavior. And that's what I think was my favorite part of his talk was about the chat box in either Dota or League of Legends. I can't remember. All these MOBAs, I can't keep them straight. So typically, if someone's being nasty in the chat box, they just get their chat box privileges removed. So they're just banned. That's a normal thing for, I mean, that's what we do in my site. You know, it's a normal thing. But what the game did is that it limited how much somebody could talk. So they're not just cut off, that they actually still can connect and interact and play, but in a very, very restricted way. So if you only get, say, 10 sentences or, you know, 500 characters in a match, even the trolliest troll, if he cares about his stats at all, is going to be really deliberate with how he interacts with his teammates. He's not going to, well, in theory, not going to waste his time typing out really horrific things and annoying people, because for every character he wastes on that, he can't say something really important about, hey, I need a power up, or hey, I need help here, or hey, watch your back, and he's more likely to lose. So again, it's using the design of the game itself or the interface itself to not stop behavior, like say the Xbox Live version does, where you are in purgatory or you're not. But instead of just stopping behavior, it actually works to actively change behavior. And I think that is the biggest, most important aspect of this talk period.
Yeah, and how hard that is to do.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah. Behavior change is very hard.
In Destiny, there's a pretty good reporting system. It has a whole bunch of checkboxes, and they're like green or red, and you can say which behaviors were positive, which behaviors are negative, and you know what that person did, and you can submit reports on every player. But it's not easy to do.
Right.
And I've very, very rarely done it after a game, because I finish a game and I'm either about to head out, or I'm, you know, about to start again, or something happens. I don't know, right? And it's hard to, like, you go into the menu system and then you go in and then you say the report and then you choose everything. It's not simple. But I remember something that, what is it, Ubisoft started doing a few years ago with the Assassin's Creed games, is that when you, as soon as you finish a level, it has a feedback screen, and they want you to rate the level before you can continue.
Oh.
And they do that for every level. And I've always thought that was genius, a genius way to just get feedback from the player about your levels, you know? You're constantly cranking out these games. Let's see what people liked about it, which ones people liked and which ones they didn't. And that, I mean, it's automatic. It comes up. You can opt out of it, but it only takes a second. And plus, you're incentivized to do that so you can move forward, right?
Yeah.
And if you really like the level, then why not? Why not say, hey, I want more like this?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And one thing that was consistent through the behavior changes in the talk was it's right in front of your face. You don't have to go digging through a menu. It is something that is literally in your face that you need to either, I mean, you can dismiss, but it's just as easy to dismiss as it is to click a button. So I would love to see at the end of, say, a Halo game to have people's names come up and I can just hit A, you know, send positive feedback, hit A, you know, or back out. So not even leave. So if you want to launch a complaint, you still have to go through the menus. But if you just want to say, hey, good game, or some kind of positive or something like that, just a simple tap that's just as easy as backing out of a menu. I feel like that's where video games are going, and that's where they need to go.
Yeah, and you know, something as simple as a plus it or minus, and then maybe you get an email or a message later about the minus, like, hey, do you want to give more information? Like, that makes it really easy for everybody, and it gives everyone the opportunity, and it fosters a culture of providing that feedback.
Yeah, and
that's so good.
So that's the other part of it is, oh, this is normal. Giving good feedback is normal. I guess I will do that more than, say, you know, give really crappy feedback, especially if it's harder to do. Because I know for me, if somebody goes out of their way to team kill or, you know, send me really lovely messages, I will go through the menus and I will report them because that's important to me. But I try to think about, do I do that to give people good feedback? No, I don't. So, you know, it's a very human thing. But yeah, so making it's a very basic design idea of whatever you want somebody to actually do, that needs to be front and center. And the behaviors you want to see less of, you make them harder to get to or harder to act out. And that's what we see with, you know, limiting the amount of microphone, person-to-person microphone interactions over Xbox Live. That's what you see with on Twitter, even being able to block people, or Facebook is notoriously good at this by being able to take stuff off of your friends, off of your newsfeed, but not unfriend the person, because Facebook doesn't want you to unfriend somebody. That's actually a lot more menus to get through. But to unfollow somebody from your feed, it's really easy. And so that's, you know, if you don't want something there, rather than complain about it, you just unfollow them. But Facebook still gets to keep that friend connection, which helps their stats.
Yeah. Yeah. And it helps your stats because you look like you have more friends, even though you want to see nothing of what they're posting.
Do you remember when having a count on your friends actually mattered? Oh, that was so long ago.
Yeah, yeah. Followers still matter on Twitter.
Followers matter, yes. But friends on Facebook, I don't think anybody even keeps track anymore.
I don't know. Facebook is for old people, so I hear.
That's what the kids say these days.
That's what the kids say. Another example, like I'm getting a lot of, I'm remembering a lot of really good examples of and bad examples, but Square, the company where you can, you know, pay on your cell phone or an iPad, lot of places that you'll go, you know, a lot of food places, they'll just have a Square reader, right? Or a Square register. And a real great thing that they do is that your credit card is tied to your email. So you swipe your card, you pay. And then you can set it to automatically send you an email or email your receipt. So then when you get your receipt, it has a smiley face and a sad face. And it just asks, how did we do?
Yep.
And then you hit one or the other. And then it'll go to another screen and it'll say, thank you. If you want to add more information, we'd love to hear it.
And then you don't even have to do the smiley face. You can just delete the email and move on.
Yep. Or just do the smiley face and not give it extra information, or vice versa.
You can do whatever you want. But the thing is that it is there and it is delivered to you. You do not have to seek it out. It's delivered to you. And that simple change actually creates a lot of behavioral change.
And it's so valuable to the restaurant owner or the even for Square. You know, it's something that's... It's just good design. Good design.
And there's this real big argument within my brain of one part of me that thinks human beings are inherently good. You know, why do we have to design systems to make people act like human beings? But then on the other side, it's more of the social psychology, not that great opinion of human beings side. And the idea that, yeah, things need to be designed to be conducive to the behavior that you want because human beings are... animals at the end of the day. One of my dissertation chair, actually, he was like my best friend through all of grad school. He was my chair. He was my supervisor. He was like, we should just moved in together. We did research. It was awesome. But he was a social psychologist before he became a clinical psychologist. And so one day I asked him, why did you leave social psych? And he told me that he used to do a lot of surveys specifically regarding human behavior without supervision. So questionnaires about if you knew you wouldn't get caught, or if it was 100% sure you wouldn't get caught, would you? And then it's just a list of items from, you know, steal an ice cream cone or something very minimal like that, up to, you know, murder your spouse. And what he told me is that he got so depressed with humanity by reviewing those responses for years that he had to leave. Like seeing what people said they would do if there was not these social norms, this social design that is conducting our behavior in a pro-social way, that he had to leave.
So right now on the news, there is the Ashley Madison hack.
Yes.
Right? So Ashley Madison is a website for people who want to cheat on their spouses or their significant others. Doesn't matter, right? That's the agreement. And how many people would have used the site at all if they knew that a few years later, or, you know, however long ago you used it, there would be a hack and all of your personal information would be out there. It's really, really fascinating to see how this is going to play out. I read headlines where I don't know if this is true or not, that there have been reported suicides from people whose information was released. I don't know if that's true or not, But it goes into this topic that we're talking about, like what would you do if you could just get away with it? And I've always thought that Ashley Madison, the idea, right? Everybody's there because they agree that they're going to do this one thing. And then so they have their own thing over there. And then if that's not what you want to do, there's another group over here. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have communities where you can, yeah, if you just want to be an asshole all the time, then there's a place for you, right? There's a community over here. I don't know what it's called, but I'm sure you found it because somebody told you to go there at one point or another. And then there are others where, you know, you just don't want that. So I don't think – I like the idea that we can design these spaces where we would want to spend time. And I think that the big gaming companies have a huge problem where they have so many people who are so different doing so many different things. So in the case of Xbox and PlayStation, they have their networks. They include voice chat. They have cool stuff like being able to form parties. So it's just you and the people you care about. You don't have to talk to the other people. But Nintendo is really interesting. And I want to hear your opinion on this because Nintendo, they have a no chat policy. None of their games allow chat. And some of them really, really need it.
Well, Nintendo has always been focused on children. I mean, that has been their mission since pretty much day one. That's what made them marketable in the 80s. And that's why they continue to dominate, is because they focus on children. And now that those children are grown up, now they're focusing on the nostalgia that they had as children. And so I can see them removing chat. Especially if that is their mission, then it makes total sense to not have chat, because there's, you know, the idea that an 8-year-old could be online talking with, you know, an adult unsupervised, it causes a lot of concerns and a lot of issues that they just do not have to deal with. I mean, and think about it, all those resources that Sony and Xbox put into moderation for chat, Nintendo doesn't have to worry about that. And I think that's pretty smart, especially considering who their niche target is.
So I'm going to push back on everything you just said, right?
Bring it.
Say, first of all, we know the stats that gamers are way older than children, right? First of all. Second of all, Nintendo is not dominating anything, and I'm pretty sure it has a lot to do with this type of thing, where you're so far behind on allowing this type of technology for games that it's intrinsic to the experience. Like you it's essential to the experience. You need to be able to chat, to actually be successful in, for example, Splatoon, which is one of their new games, which is a third-person shooter, a team-based third-person shooter, and they don't allow chat. Now, they have been smart, and they've been experimenting in many different ways, like they have a new Zelda game coming out where it's 3 players cooperative, and then you have a whole bunch of emoticons on the bottom, and those kind of pop up. Every time you press the button, it pops up on the screen, and everybody sees it, so you can kind of try to help each other out. But I played the game at Gamacon, and it was so hard to play, even with the 2 other people right there with me. Just because we couldn't hear each other perfectly, it was so hard to complete the objectives. And then the other thing is that their focus has been for many years on family, on interacting with family. And as someone who has family members who have a Wii and a Wii U, it was so hard to actually have to set up something additional to be able to chat. So we'd either have to get on Skype or we'd have to call each other on the phone. And then if you wanted to play with more than 2 people, that gets more complicated because maybe a lot of people aren't comfortable using something like a Google Hangout or chat or Skype to talk with more people. So they even make it hard for family members to play together. So And right now they're not dominating anything. They're doing really, really poorly. Even though they keep designing games, it's so funny because they're almost resisting getting into this space. And now for everything that we've discussed, there's good reason to not even want to touch that.
But I mean, like you said, they're a family focused, and when they're talking about family, they definitely envision everybody in the same room. I mean, that is. The Wii U, for example, is designed as a party game. Like everybody in the same room with the controllers. That, I think, is its core idea. Not that it can't be used in other ways, but that's the core value of Nintendo from way back in the day.
Yeah, but still, they have games where like Mario Kart, like Smash Brothers, like Splatoon, which I mentioned, they have robust online functionality, just as good as anything else that anybody else has, with the exception that they will not allow voice chat.
So yeah, they're
so frustrating.
Some of the games that they're making are coming into conflict with that core value, and I think that's what we're seeing, and that's the frustration that is coming across in players.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then it results in poor sales.
They're not doing great. But they're not going bankrupt either. And like you said, the new Legend of Zelda is going to come out, and then there'll be a new Mario, and they've got the Amiibos. Nintendo One has never ever cared what anybody else does. Like, they've always been just doing their own thing, and I think, you know, they're doing fine in Japan. They might not be as strong in the American market as they used to be, but that would be pretty much impossible. And yeah, they've seen better days, but they're still doing fine. They're still making great games, and it's a different idea of what they want in their product. So I certainly don't blame them at all, but I also can see it from the player perspective of, it would be really nice to play Mario Kart and be able to talk and chat, you know, even if it was somebody who I had to, like, I could only talk to people on this list, and as opposed to anybody could join. I think there are ways around it, but I can definitely understand where they're coming from.
But it's got to be the laziest version of design that we can possibly touch upon. It's like, well, we're not even going to touch the problem. Let's just not have a problem, and that way we don't have to design around it.
Or that, smart.
I don't think so.
Work smarter, not harder, Jose.
Nope. That's why they're not doing well. They're not doing well at all.
So what I want to know is, we've touched on this a couple times, but what I want to know is, if you wouldn't get caught, what is the craziest thing that you would do that you'll admit to on the podcast?
I am under the impression that I might get caught doing anything. Like, I'm not paranoid, but I've accepted that I'd get caught doing anything.
Okay, so, well, let's go to a pretend place where
I can't even go to that pretend place. Yeah,
that's not fair.
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah.
Fine, I'll do it. I don't care. I can go to a pretend place. If I knew I wouldn't get caught, like 100%, you know, I was in the clear, I would go, not proud, I would probably go to where my loans are held and delete my account and erase all evidence of my student loans.
Gotcha. I actually want to pay my student loans.
I don't. Because,
I would like to someday pay them. So no, I don't think I'd do that.
Oh, I totally
wouldn't want to steal. I wouldn't want to. Although crime statistics in the U.S. show that about 80% of crimes that are committed from on every level are never, like, no one ever even notices. So the odds are you'd probably be okay. Except it's all digital now and stuff, and it's more likely to get caught. But which is interesting, because now we don't only have a criminal system, we also have a social system, you know? Like, the hackers the people who hacked Ashley Madison weren't the government. It wasn't the church either, you know? It was just...
Citizen activists.
Yeah. You've got Anonymous. You've got other people who are just, you know, you don't know who you're accountable to anymore. Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anything that I would do if I can never get caught. I can't think of anything right now. I don't know.
Lame. Minus
yeah,
one
I
lame.
Know. Tell me about it. Can't think of anything.
Well, think on that, and maybe next week when we come back, you'll have thought of something and you can share with us then.
Meh.
Of course, the listeners out there, if they want to own up to something that they would do if they wouldn't get caught, of course, what they're willing to put out there to the universe. You know, just saying.
It's optional. You do not have to answer that question.
Yep. Or you can and be cool like me. So.
Any closing thoughts on the video? On the kind of just the idea.
I mean, just absolutely amazing. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. If you have any interest in the way that game design or design in general influences behavior, again, the title is Antisocial Behavior in Games, How Can Game Design Help? And it's by Ben Lewis Evans. He's a PhD And you can also follow him. I followed him on Twitter, of course. And he said, thank you. I retweeted his stuff and he said, thank you. And so now I'm all Twitter-pated.
That's it. Very pro-social behavior.
Get it? Twitter-pated. Twitter. Anyway, his Twitter handle is at IKBenBen. So IKBENBEN. And yeah, he's so cool. He's my new best friend. He just doesn't know it yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not going to do 20 questions this week because I am very disappointed by your performance on recent Psych-Tech 20 questions. So
I kicked butt last week. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but that's because I catered to you exactly. I shouldn't have done that. I was like, well,
yeah, that doesn't sound like a, that doesn't sound like a me problem, Josue. That sounds like a Josue problem.
Not fun. Not fun.
I thought it was awesome.
I think I'm with something else. All right, so that's it for this week. Definitely, if you're at PAX this weekend, look Kelly up. You can find her online. Go to psychtechpodcast.com. You can find all our information there. Or shout out on Twitter at psychtechcast. And we're everywhere. We'll be back next week with an episode. You think you'll bring back anything cool from PAX to talk about? Maybe.
Hopefully lots of awesome experiences.
A lot of pro-social experiences?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, at PAX East last year, there were a lot of talks about antisocial behavior that were really, really good and just trolling and stuff. Unfortunately, it's a big part of the gaming community, so it's something that we're talking about more and more. So that's it for this week, and we'll catch you all next week.